Welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Monday, May 4th, 2026. I am Carl James, joined by Chris Feeney, Zach Horwitz, and Cassidy Palmer. Indiana baseball started the week by going on the road to Louisville and claiming another midweek win to finish the season, an impressive 9-2 in those contests. The Hoosiers got a fantastic five-inning scoreless start from graduate lefty Connor Lynn, and the offense put up five runs in the third on the way to a 10-6 victory. The Hoosiers got a special treat in being the team that got to play the Northwestern in the annual game at Wrigley Field in Chicago. Our own Zach and Josh Bennett were on hand for that one. The Hoosiers put on a show for the mostly IU-friendly crowd. Tony Newbeck tossed six scoreless frames. The top of the Hoosier order, Hogan Denny, Jake Hanley, and Owen Tenuver, combined to reach base nine times. The Hoosiers dominated the game for a 9-2 win. The series shifted to the suburb of Evanston on Saturday, and things did not go well for the Hoosiers. At least three critical base running mistakes kept the Hoosiers from extending an early lead. Starter Brayton Thomas was excellent through two innings, but lost command in the third inning and never returned to form. He was replaced in the fourth, and Indiana would give up seven runs total. Despite a 4-for-4 day from Hogan Denny and Indiana doubling Northwestern's hit total, the Hoosiers dropped the game 7-4. In the Sunday rubber match, it was the early game pitching that faltered as Connor Lynn was not as effective on short rest, and Northwestern rocked bullpen ace Gavin Siebold in the second inning. Siebold would settle in and get the Hoosiers through the fifth, but the deficit proved too much, and the Hoosiers dropped the series with the loss. All right, well, we'll start off with Zach, because Zach got to be there, and while pretty much everything after Saturday, after Friday was Friday night was awesome. So, Zach, what can you tell us about Wrigley Field?
It really was. It's something I'll definitely remember for the rest of my life, honestly. Having kind of free rein around Wrigley Field. I spent most of my time outside trying to get pictures and videos. I think I did it. I think everything I posted that night had at least one picture or video in it. So that was my goal. That was great. Just wanted to share it kind of with everybody. But just being... I can say I've been to Wrigley Field twice before that, when I was 6 years old and 10 years old. I had never really understood the history and kind of the feeling of being in there. It's just kind of another baseball game. But this time around, I stood there and I realized, like, they played baseball here in the early 1900s. Like, this is unbelievable. The history that I'm surrounded by, it simply felt different. It's a special place. In the press box, obviously, you see all the Harry Carey stuff on the wall, and it was just truly a unique experience that I'm so glad Indiana, even in a season like this, where obviously we've all sat through the struggles of the year, that they get rewarded with this kind of game, and I get rewarded with this kind of experience. So that was certainly an awesome experience. The game was great. Indiana scored nine runs, I believe it was. They kind of just totally outplayed them early. It was freezing both days, actually. It was about 40 degrees. The wind was howling in my face. I was sitting behind home plate and around the first baseline. And then the same thing at Northwestern the next day in Evanston, which I'll start with. Nice stadium there. I've never seen a smaller ballpark in my life. I think there were five sections and there were five rows in each. Like, it was, I mean, nice, but almost like a glorified high school stadium. But yeah, that was cool. They didn't have enough space for me in the press box, so it was freezing out. Eventually I found my way into an empty suite and I kind of snuck in there and no one said anything to me. So I was indoors for Saturday, which obviously was not as good of a game, but great experience. Always appreciative to get, this is kind of my first trip I've done for IU baseball, actually, but appreciative of the opportunity, and I'm glad I could share it here.
All right, so we'll now turn it over to Cass. Do you have any nice statistic nuggets for us today, Cass?
I don't know if nice is the right word in this point in the season. I don't know that I'd call many of the numbers nice. And this week I kind of wanted to keep it simple and just look at some basic statistics, starting with some of the numbers in conference play. Indiana has an OPS of 773 in conference play. Opponents have an OPS of 900. They have exactly the same number of at bats, and yet Big Ten opponents have about 20 more runs scored on the conference season. More, significantly more RBI, which, yeah, more doubles, more triples, more home runs, slugging 503, more walks, more total bases. On the pitching side, they have a lower whip, even in more innings pitched. Opponents have allowed fewer hits, obviously fewer runs, fewer earned runs. It kind of goes all along. The one thing that's pretty even across IU versus Big Ten opponents is fielding. Fielding is as close to equal as it can get at 978 for opponents and 977 for IU. I mean, this is what we've been seeing this year. Opponents hit more extra base hits, and they're able to drive in more runs. Even looking at those RBI numbers, and I'm actually going to do some quick live math, which is always something you want to do. So their runs were driven in RBI about 92% of the time, whereas IU's was about 89% of the time. That seems like a small number, a small difference in percentage. And early in the season, I would say the same thing. Like that small, like that's not a meaningful number. But at this point in the season, that small amount, those are the extra runs given up. The whether it's errors that lead to runs scoring or fluky situations, or I believe balking a run would count that same way. Hit by pitch, walk in a run, those things would all have RBIs attached. But those are the mistake runs, the runs that should not happen. And so seeing that, I mean, teams haven't scored that many more runs than IU given the end result, the win-loss differential. Feeney's excited about something, and it's probably not these numbers. But given how tight some of these games have been that have gone the other way, all of those little mistakes matter. And so that was what really stood out to me, was just how one-sided the conference season numbers are. The season as a whole are not as stark. It's a lot more balanced. In fact, IU has more hits than opponents in the regular season, in the full season. Higher batting average, slightly lower OPS, but not by that much. Less power, like I was saying, but other than that, in the full season, it's really not that different. It's only run differential of 8. Like across the season, it's mostly evened out. It's just been those key moments. And so,
Yeah, 1-6 in one run games and 9-2 in midweeks.
And haven't come back after the sixth inning when trailing. There have been some ties that have kind of gone each way, but not once this season have come back from trailing after the sixth. It's all of those little things. You can't point to just one thing this year. It's all of the little things stacked on top of each other. So that's what stood out to me. Unfortunately, not, like I said, not happy numbers, not great numbers, but we kind of knew after losing the series to Northwestern, they weren't going to be happy fun numbers. But Feeney, we do always find that silver lining. Who do you have for red belts this week?
Well, Cass, I was paying attention to your stats as best as I could as Devin Williams took the mound with a 2-run lead. Somehow, I don't know how this happened, but Devin Williams got the save and the Mets just won 4-2. It took
Congrats.
4 tries for the Mets to beat the Rockies this season.
We got swept at home by these clowns. I can't believe we just won this game. All right, so that was a good start to the at Colorado series. Devin Williams, who I hate looking at his face, was able to get the save, which was great. So we'll give a blue and orange belt to Devin Williams, I guess, just because he got the job done. For our red belts, for our Hoosier red belts, we have offensively, I think this one is obvious, Hogan Denny, 9 hits, 7 runs, 2 RBIs, a walk, a steal, a bomb. I mean, this guy filled the stat sheet like no other. They couldn't get him out. Like, I was watching at one point, and the announcers were like, oh, he's not at first base. Like, they were shocked. I think it had been like 8 at-bats in a row that he didn't get on. It was wild. Hogan was hot. And Zach touched on it. Unfortunately, we didn't really take advantage. I mean, he did score 7 runs for the series, including Louisville, but really not enough to not be able to beat, you know, the dregs. Well, we're the dregs as well of the Big Ten standings, but it is what it is. For pitching, for the Alex Dick, excuse me, for the Joey Donato Award, we're gonna go Tony Newbeck. I mean, I just thought it was a really special moment for him to be able to be on that mound at Wrigley Field, and then to perform the way he did, 6 shutouts, 7 Ks, just the 4 hits. You know, he faced 27 batters, he threw 100 pitches. Really, really good job. And I know, well, it's Tony, right? You expected it, yeah, but you don't know. I know he's our guy, but you don't know that's going to happen. Wrigley Field, the whole thing. He came through, and it was really nice to watch. And just for him, not that he's been with us all these years, but we know the story. Zach did the profile on him. Like, we know what this guy's been through. And I thought that was really cool. So he's going to get the pitching award. For defensive award, again, like, kind of like last week, I really didn't have a standout like home run robbery or this, that. But that, to me, there was a big moment in that Louisville game. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Lucas Moore. He's the speedster of the Louisville Cardinals. This guy has 102 steals in his 3 years with Louisville. He had 17 the first year, 53 last year, and he's got 35 already this year. And TJ Skyler threw him out from his knees. So I thought that was, I mean, he Benito Santiago, this sucker, and he got him. So I'm going to give the red belt to TJ for that. He even had a hit and an RBI in a game. Not that, you know, that doesn't matter for the defensive red belt, but it was impressive. So for TJ, and just to touch on a few things, the average for catches in D1 is like 35, 40% of runners that you throw out. TJ Skyler is 63%. I mean, this guy's an elite guy behind the plate defensively. So TJ gets our defensive red belt. Tony gets our pitching red belt, and Hogan Denny for the offense. And the Mets won a game today. Woo-hoo! Let's hope another blue and orange team can win one. Ooh, they're about to tip off. Go Knicks! We're gonna kick this over to
Well,
Carl.
before we kick
Yes.
it to Carl, I was going to give a quick update as we get to the last couple weeks of the regular season, because all three of the the Red Belts are still competitive with 2 weeks remaining. We've got three guys in the running for the Joey Donato. We've
Who's
got
that? Tony Siebold and
and Yarberry.
Yarberry. Okay.
Yep, those are all within at least tying distance.
So they're not, they don't have the elimination thing next to their name like we do in the
Right.
standings.
They are not mathematically eliminated.
Gotcha.
On the Alex Dickerson red belt, I'm going to call this one a toss-up
Oh.
because there is literally at this point nobody on the team eliminated. I guess maybe technically the pitching staff. But there is no
Wow.
bat eliminated because
I would have
the
thought Jake and Denny would have been like ahead.
nope. The Denny, Hanley, Koski, and Tanuver all have two each with 2 weeks remaining. So
Koski. Yeah, I should have thought about Koski too. You're right.
technically some random bat could come in and take it these next 2 weeks, and it would be a what, five-way tie?
Who said they had nothing to play for down the stretch?
So that one is still, like I said, it's a toss-up. It could
Wow.
go to anybody.
This is why we need a cast of stats. We have something to root for the last 2 weeks of this season.
Then on the defensive side, everybody who has gotten a red belt is still in play
Whoa.
because the leader at the moment is Koski with three. And so technically, anyone who has at least one could tie for
Does anyone have
that.
two?
Yes, Decker has two, and then Moore, Skyler, Hanley, Denny, Rivera, Kraus, and Ricketts all have one.
Rafael's got one. I love it. I remember that
Yes.
one.
Yes. And so all three of these are still pretty wide open as we come down the stretch.
Rivera's got. Oh, imagine if Rivera pulled this off, put that in his DMs.
Yes. So now we can kick it back over.
Yep. All right. Well, Big Ten is clearly not looking good for the Hoosiers. And as far as the race for the title, there is none. UCLA is the champion. It's decided already. With 2 weeks to go, we already know who the champion is, and there is zero question about that. So there obviously is still, competition there for one of those for those top four slots, although there's actually a decent amount of separation. Michigan is playing 625 in the league, while USC is at 704. Nebraska getting swept by Ohio State this weekend was a bit of a shocker, and is a real shock to Nebraska's hosting hopes. They're going to have to put a tear on, and they might even have to get to do go back to getting Magic in the Big Ten tournament. Now, for them, they're still third in the conference, so they're still going to get one of those. They still should get one of those top four slots in the Big Ten tournament, so that they will not have to play till Friday and have a legit chance to actually win the thing. Although they don't need to win the thing to get in. I mean, they're getting into the NCAA tournament, but winning the Big Ten tournament might be that final little piece that pushes them over to being able to host. Their RPI is still in hosting range. They're 18th overall. IU will be traveling to Purdue this weekend. Purdue is now up to 52 in the RPI, so they are a solid bubble team at this point. So that's what this series is going to mean. To the Boilermakers. Top 12 get into the Big Ten tournament. Number 12 right now is Rutgers. They're at 9-15. IU is in 15th now at 7-17. So that's two games behind the team they need to pass. But the thing is, it's not just about how many games back you are, it's also about the fact that you have to pass three teams. And the likelihood that all these teams are going to be bad and bad enough while you're also good, especially playing a team that is having as good a season as Purdue is. There is a, it would require the final 2 weeks to be something unlike anything we've seen this season for Indiana to have a realistic shot. And I know, it's still mathematically possible, so it's not out of the realm of possibility, but IU is going to have to play a type of baseball we have yet to see. They're going to, I think at the bare minimum, they have to sweep one series. They have to win both series, and one of those has to be a sweep. And Indiana hasn't swept anybody anywhere this season. And we're just so far into it now that I don't see something new happening here. As far as our group goes and our pick-ems, well, as we already announced last week, we knew that there was going to be no change in the order because the four of us all picked identically. And we were 6-1 on the week. We did not pick a ranked Nebraska team to get swept by Ohio State. In fact, nobody did, not even Bowen and Drew. They were along those lines with us. But the four of us got all the other series picked correctly. So we do have a new series, a new weekend coming up. We already talked about IU and Purdue. Iowa travels to Nebraska. That's their rivalry series as well. You've got a East Coast rivalry series with Maryland traveling to Rutgers. Michigan goes to Minnesota, kind of a classic top tier mid Big Ten matchup. Michigan State's going to Ohio State. Northwestern at Illinois, another rivalry. Oregon at UCLA. That's the juicy matchup of the week, and then Washington at Penn State. So I've decided I'm going to go ahead and go first because some people think that I cheat. So I am picking Nebraska at home. I think they're going to recover from that Ohio State series. And Nebraska does this. This is the same time of year back in 21, and I know that was a long time ago, but they, somehow got beat by Rutgers in a three games is swept by Rutgers in a three game series, and that was in Nebraska. Okay, I'm gonna pick Rutgers at home versus Maryland. I'm going with Michigan at Minnesota. I had to think on that one for a bit, but I think Michigan is just they're a machine right now, and I'm sticking with them. I'm not going to pick against Ohio State at home right now. They've just been too good. I'm going with Illinois at home over Northwestern. It's getting down to the wire. I'm two series down. So I say the Bruin train comes to an end this weekend. I am going with Oregon. That the undefeated Bruins, who have now secured the Big Ten title, are going to lose a series in the Big Ten, and it will be this weekend. Washington over Penn State, easy. That's even though that's in Happy Valley, I'm going with Washington. And even though I don't think Washington's a great team, I'm going with Washington. All right, who wants to jump in next?
Carl, we're tied. Cass has the edge here, so I won't change too much up. But we have the same picks outside of I'll take UCLA, but I do think that their undefeated streak in the Big Ten comes to an end. I think Oregon will take one. I think they have to. But that Michigan Minnesota series is tough. But Michigan's just been good enough. They win the close game, so I think that's where I'm going to go. And especially with Nebraska at home against Iowa, they have to bounce back. They're still in it. Like their season's not done because of that last that sweep this past weekend. So they also have huge crowds there in Lincoln recently, so I'll take them.
And mine is not far off, if I was keeping track correctly. I think the only one I'm differing from Carl is I am taking Maryland over Rutgers. So I'm taking Nebraska, Maryland, Michigan. No, and I'm taking UCLA. So I'm, yeah. Nebraska, Maryland, Michigan, Ohio State, Illinois, UCLA, Washington. Although that would, if that were literally anybody but Penn State, I probably would have picked the anybody else.
Chris.
I got Penn State. I'm going to take. I know they're last in the standings, but I think they're primed for a good series. So we're going to go Penn State. We're going to go Rutgers. Ohio State's got the Mo, right? Uncle Mo is wearing red and white, so they're going to keep going. I got Iowa and Illinois. I've been talking about this for weeks. I'm a believer in this Minnesota home field advantage, so I'm going to take Minnesota. I'm going to stick with that. And I don't know, Carl, you went for it. I'm going to take the Bruins.
All right. Well, it means I can gain a series on everybody if the what everyone would generally say is impossible were to happen. And that's what you got to do when you're behind. So that's what I'm doing. All right. So that's the pick'ems for the week. And now we pass it over to Chris to talk about our Hoosiers in the pros.
All right, so somebody we definitely want to talk about is Devin Taylor. All right, he's playing for the Lansing Lugnuts, and he's probably not going to be doing that for long. It's a high A league called the Midwest League. He's got four home runs. He's hitting .330, which is third in the league. He's got 21 RBIs, which is third in the league. He's got 32 hits, which is second in the league. So expect a promotion for Devin Taylor. I mean, obviously, right? We knew this guy's a stud. I wish the Mets would have drafted him. I'm glad the Yankees didn't right after us. That would have been not good for me. So expect a promotion. If you want that Lansing Lugnut gear, which they have nice gear, like it's cool looking stuff. Get it now if you want Taylor on the back, because I think he's getting in that elevator up, and he would be then a Midland Rockhead. That's just the double A team, so we'll see how that goes. Braden Scott, for those who've been watching and following along for a while, Braden Scott has just been bouncing around for different independent leagues, and he's in another one now, and he's pitching for the York Revolution. His last two starts, 16 strikeouts. So that's a Braden Scott type deal. You guys remember him. Let's see, Philip Glasser, speaking of pitching, he made his second pitching appearance, and he got out of the jam, one pitch, his knuckleball ended the inning. So I guess they put Glasser in sometimes when they need a good knuckleball. Seems to be working. Tanner Gordon, he just got his 100th strikeout in the major leagues. He's got 104 now, actually. And some people who are close to him, we got Scott Efros, 88 Ks, as far as Hoosiers. And he recently passed this Whitey Wilshire, which I've heard a lot about. So Tanner Gordon just jumps up above Whitey, and he's got 104 strikeouts in the major leagues. His next goal is to get Timmy Herron. He's got 151. So we'll see if we can get him. Speaking of milestones, Kyle Schwarber, 350. That's a big milestone. Then he hit 351, I believe, later in that game or later in the doubleheader. So he's tied with Dick Allen. I'm not that familiar with Dick Allen, but I am familiar with Chili Davis and George Foster, and he just passed them. So his next, just to kind of give a range of where he is, Ryan Braun and Torrey Hunter are his next. At like 353 and 354. So it really shows what Kyle's been doing. I mean, he's heading to the Hall of Fame. I mean, if he can keep this up, I'll knock on my wood table here, but barring an injury, I don't see how this man does not hit 500 home runs. And there's only been 28 human beings that have done that. So, you know what I mean? If he's the 29th, I think you're going to have to get him a plaque in the Hall of Fame, but we'll see where he goes from here. He's definitely on his way. One last shout out we want to give is Jack Perkins. He's the closer of the A's now, and he's doing really well. They took him out of the rotation. They put him at the back end, and he seems to have that closing mentality. He's got a couple saves now for the A's. I'm trying to see if they'll get Devin Taylor promoted all the way up so he can be with Jack Perkins on the team. But I mean, that might be a little much for this season. But yeah, that's our alumni update for this week.
All right. Okay, so we've got our roundtable conversation now. If you had told me in February this team would finish the season 9-2 in midweek games, looking at the midweek schedule, especially preseason, I think I would say, oh, this is a regional team, right? How have they been so good on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and so bad on Saturdays and Sundays?
Better pitching on the weekends.
That's my first point,
I
also.
really think that's what it is. I think
That
the better pitching
Indiana,
is what it is.
yeah, Indiana as a team, the hitters are more talented than the pitching they'll face in the midweek. But even when I, okay, another thing. So the pitching is definitely an easier opponent there. I think the game against Vanderbilt. So Indiana should beat these teams like Indiana State and Evansville. They didn't beat Evansville, but Evansville one and one.
Yeah.
These kind of teams, like I remember last year, they lose to Northern Kentucky or like something like that. They shouldn't lose to these teams. And I think this year, when they played Vanderbilt, that was almost like a one-man effort. Hogan Denny kind of took over that game and won it himself. But the Indiana's two biggest wins were Vanderbilt and Louisville this year. And the game at Louisville, I think, is just kind of riding a momentum of we know that we could beat teams like this because we did it a couple weeks back at Vanderbilt. So I think they just kind of piece it together. And Connor Lynn has been a big part of that. Their two biggest games, their two biggest wins were his best performances on the year. So they could swing the bat well enough against lower level pitching and then get a good pitching performance out of it. And when it comes to the weekend, I don't think Northwestern's Sunday pitcher is that much better than Louisville's midweek starter. But I think also the ambiance of it, I could tell you, even this weekend at Northwestern, I mentioned the small stadium and all that. They brought their band there, like a three rows of a band. And the dugout is fired up when they score a run. Like, I think it's the ambiance, the environment, you know, that it just feels like it matters more on the weekend that they haven't had as much success there. I don't know if that's true at any site or if that's just my thinking, but I think just the environment that this is a young team for Indiana, and then it just the moments feel bigger on the weekend.
Well, and I think kind of going off of that and what you said a little earlier, some amount of midweek success, midweek wins, I could attribute to midweeks are weird. Midweeks are fluky. That's where you see weird games. You see a 20-10 game on the midweeks. You get different pitchers in different situations. You're using what you've got in the bullpen, see who you can get to do something. Maybe you've got guys throwing an inning where they wouldn't be throwing an inning. You get weird results in midweeks. And like you said, Zach, we've had years where IU loses to Northern Kentucky or some other team in the midweek that they have absolutely no business losing to.
Purdue Fort Wayne.
Yes. Yes.
Who doesn't have a program anymore?
Program anymore. But so there is some amount of weird flukiness with midweeks. That's always been the case. To go 9-2, though, that's beyond fluky, lucky, weird midweek stuff. There's something there. And some of it is the lower level. There are some Bradley that was never going to be a loss and it shouldn't be a loss, but we said that about IBFW too, or not. I know it's not.
Those were the mastodons, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
They don't
Ones
have a
who don't have
program
a
anymore?
band. They
Nope,
don't have a
they
program.
scratched their program last year.
So they changed names and then they just killed the whole thing.
Yep.
Damn.
But yeah, so there's a small amount you could attribute to weird stuff. That's not the whole story. And so.
Well, there's another piece of this, and there is a true positive, I think, in the midweek piece, and that is, and this is more early on, because I agree with you, Zach. The last month or so, it's a lot of it's been Connor Lynn, because he's been shifted to the midweeks and opening, and being a starter. But that's the midweek is where we first, really saw Ivan Mostalski break out. We've seen Kellen English in multiple midweeks be successful. And then some of the guys that after struggling in an outing out of the bullpen during the weekend would kind of come and get themselves right in an inning in the midweek. Reagan Rivera's had a few of those one inning performances, and oftentimes it goes on to the next weekend he ends up having a couple good innings in the weekend as well. But it just seems like every IU pitcher has had at least one, if not multiple, turns where things have gone poorly. And that just and honestly, just the I don't remember a significant example of that happening in a midweek. And of course, in a midweek, you have the option, they have the option of, okay, well, we're just going to go. We have 2 days off after this because they're almost all on Tuesday, and they can just start stacking guys one inning at a time. So there isn't a, ooh, I can't bring this guy in because if we do that, we're gonna be in bad shape for the next two games, which are start tomorrow. They've had a little bit more flexibility in making pitching moves in the midweeks than they have on the weekend. And on the weekend, it's sort of like, ooh, if things aren't going well, we're going to kind of punt it. And that's tended to be more of a Saturday thing because they've actually played pretty well on Friday too. That would actually be an interesting stat to, if you threw in Friday with Tuesday and Wednesday, the weekdays versus weekends.
The Saturdays have been bad across the board. It
Yeah.
didn't matter who was starting. When Newbeck was starting Saturdays, the
Yeah.
offense couldn't do anything.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I think.
really.
Barring UCF.
Yeah.
UCF was the exception. So.
Yeah.
That they plan for one game rather than three games. That's kind of been the difference. And especially, not to really single anyone out, but Brayton Thomas and Tony Newbeck have been the two guys that have been in the rotation all year long. And Brayton Thomas has been inconsistent, that you can get three innings out of him on a Saturday, where you might have used the bullpen a bit more on a Friday and you're in a terrible spot. So it's just, I think that's the difference where the record comes in, that they've lost so many games on the weekend just because they're out of pitching on a Saturday, or they gotta, you, if you want to win on Sunday, you're gonna have to punt Saturday, which means that you might lose the series on that day. That it's just, they didn't
Yeah.
have the depth for it. They also lost Jackson Bergman. I've brought that up several weeks in a row, that it all kind of comes together, that they just didn't have enough reliable pitchers.
Yep. And I did skip something that we were supposed to discuss today, and that is Purdue. Because
Okay, you can
IU.
skip them. It's all right.
Well, I need to bring at least this point up because it ties into what Zach has brought about. Because yeah, it was fascinating looking at the stat sheet on Purdue. And in fact, I don't even need to look at it right now because I could sit there and regurgitate names. The reason Purdue is a good team is because they don't play any bad players. They don't have any stars. There's nobody, you look at the stat, there's nobody that's popping out. They've got four guys with an OPS over 1,000. And I don't think any of them are over 1,100. So it's like nobody's like, oh my goodness. I think their two top home run hitters have 10 each. Now part of that's Alexander's Field. It is a pitcher's park. So that's part of it. But even still, their two top home run hitters are 10 each. But they've got bombs from just about everybody in the lineup. And I think they've got eight guys hitting with an OPS close to 800, at least, if not higher. And pitching, same thing. There's nobody who's absolutely crazy lights out. But I think they have 11 pitchers with a whip under 1.5.
Right
These
away,
were
yeah.
numbers. The last team I remember looking at that was like this was the 2023 Kentucky team. That's what it reminded me from a stat sheet. It's like, yeah, you're not gonna sit there. It's gonna be hard for a national guy to look at this team and really talk much about them because there's no superstars. But there's nowhere to breathe if you're a pitcher facing this Purdue lineup. And there's also no, oh well, if we can find a way to drive up this starter's pitch count, we're gonna get to a reliever that we can hammer. That's not the case out of this Purdue team. And IU's gonna have to do something. No IU team has really been very good at playing in Alexander Field. Even the series that was won a couple of years ago was IU had to basically Purdue had to give that series away. Purdue had that series won and coughed it up to IU. So that's IU's got a real challenge on their hands
I would
heading up
say
to West
their
Lafayette.
chance of winning, let's say two games, if not just one, is you mentioned that the park isn't very big. They're going to need guys that have hit the ball hard recently, that being Hogan Denny, Jake Hanley, and Owen Tanuver, who has been smoking the ball this week. Those guys need to hit home runs. Like they need 2 and 3 run home runs. Like a solo homer is not going to do it. They played small ball a little bit on Friday night at Wrigley Field, which is much bigger than they'll play. That I think with the way that the pitching has gone and how thin they are, it's really going to take some big swings or some big moments to kind of change the way these go. So hopefully they can do that. I don't know if it's in the cards, but you never know in baseball.
And that seems like kind of the other thing, and I don't have numbers to back it up, but it seems like the majority of the time that there's been an opportunity for the big play, the big hit, the big out on the pitching side, it hasn't happened. I don't have stats to back that up, but it seems like, and not even necessarily in like spectacular implosion fashion. There have been times where it's been that, but it's the deep fly out when it's runner on second and 2 outs or something like that. Or even bases loaded in 2 outs and it's the deep fly ball.
I have an interesting
Willing to
trivia.
bet we fit into more double plays on the weekend than we have in the
Oh,
midweek, Carl.
I bet.
I'm going to go with that.
I would not take you up on that bet because
So they pitch better. We're facing better pitchers. And for some reason, we hit into a lot of double plays on the weekend. And we didn't do that many Zach nailed it with Lynn. What is he at? Like 11 shutout innings against Vanderbilt and Louisville? That was unexpected. I mean, the kid has been great on the midweek against. Okay, they're not, Vanderbilt of some years, and it's not Louisville of some years, but they're still uber talented teams. And,
Well,
the batting is batting.
and Louisville is one of the best offensive teams in the ACC. Their problem is their pitching. So it was extremely impressive what Lynn did to Louisville because I mean they've got the best hitter in the ACC and they shut him down. So
I see Lynn in the rotation. Do we get him another year or no?
no. No, he's a grad student.
That would have been great. We could have put him in the weekend for next year. That would have been nice.
Yeah.
But it is what
I
it is.
also I want to mention just because this is my last podcast while I'm here in Bloomington that so I'll be home this week. I'll go to one, maybe two Miami games. Who plays Louisville? So I'll see them again. But again, it's been a pleasure to be here. Year three. One more next year. Clearly, the season hasn't gone how we've wanted, but For the three of you on here, I want to thank you again. It's been a pleasure. I'll come on the next 2 weeks from home, but it's been, even though the season hasn't been well, I enjoy spending the weekends at the bar and talking on here. So just wanted to mention that.
Well,
Thanks for
we.
your hard work, bro. You've been great, man. I got to tell you, I know you're young, you're a college guy, but you're mature. You take care of your business. Everything has been on time. All the articles, you really, it's been great to have you. And we were talking about this. Was it last time we were at the bar? Hey, for those who don't know, Zach cold called us.
Yeah.
He was like, "Hey, I would love to do this. I see your site. I see what you're doing." Like, he cold called. He wanted, like, this is what this young man wanted to do, and he made sure that he did it. So that shows, motivation and that he's about getting stuff done. It's been a pleasure to have you, and I'm glad you just said another year. So I'm glad to have you for next year too, man. Definitely.
Yes, can't stress enough how huge Zach has been for us. And that is, it's especially for me, it makes my life so much easier. All right. Well, I think we're going to go ahead and wrap this up now. So I do want to thank you for listening to this episode of Talking Hoosier Baseball. And yes, we still have a couple more of these to go. For more on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. We'll continue. There's no midweek this week, but I will continue to have live game blogs. I may be in West Lafayette for at least one game, I'm hoping. So we'll see how that works out. But either way, I'll definitely have live game blogs this weekend, which you just go to iubase.com. There'll be the first red link on the site will be for the live game blog. So hit up iubase.com. For Cassidy Palmer, Zach Horwitz, and Chris Feeney, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.